It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This person will be at Huntington Bank Field on Sunday covering the game for Cleveland.com, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, as she's done for many, many years. Mary Kay Cabot joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Mary Kay, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're doing well. Lima, take it away.
Yeah, I got to say, Mary Kay, something very interesting is developing out there, and I don't know how much you pay attention to it because you're one of the best. There's a reason that you've gotten so much of your national recognition, and of course, right
Stop
here.
Stop buttering her up and ask a question.
No, I'm amazed, Mary Kay, about the people in my life, and then complete strangers on social media who want me to go after you about your opinions on the current state of the Browns quarterback. And we always say this: we're like, well, Mary Kay can defend herself, as you have done countless times. There have been times you've bludgeoned us over different arguments that we've had on the radio. So, Mary Kay, why do you think it is that we are at such an impasse right now with a lot of the conversations we're having when it comes to Deshaun Watson and now his replacement?
Well, I don't know exactly what your friends want you to go after me for, so it's hard for me to answer that. I don't know what opinions they're having a problem with.
Well, it's about Watson. It's about Watson that they want nothing to do with him ever again. They want that last game that he was the quarterback to be the last game that he is ever the quarterback again with the Browns. And they want me to scream that at you.
Okay, well, let's start with that one then. I did write a column saying that it's not a foregone conclusion that he is absolutely 100% gone by the beginning of next season, because people do need to understand that there is an economic component here. People think that you can just cut him or waive him this year, and that is not as easy as it sounds, because if you do that before June 1st, you're triggering a $172 million cap charge for next year, and you can't really do that. So they have decisions to make. I'm not saying that Deshaun Watson is ever necessarily going to be playing for the Cleveland Browns again, but they have economic and football decisions that they have to make. So people that may have just seen the tweet probably or maybe didn't read the column itself, but it lays out the financial implications of making this decision, and they really are complicated. So they have to figure out, is there a way to part ways with Deshaun Watson, or is there not a way to part ways with him? Do you have him around and he doesn't play? Is he your number two? Is he your number three? Do you tell him to go home and rehab his Achilles for the season for another year? That's basically what I wrote, is that it's just not that easy to say, okay, this is over. Now, from a football standpoint, it seems to me like I can't imagine him trotting out at Huntington Bank Field and playing in front of that crowd again. I really have a hard, hard time picturing that anymore. If that were not the case and he wasn't so hated here by the fans, then you could do some kind of a Kirk Cousins, Michael Penix model, where he comes back from the Achilles and you see if there's a way that he can be ready at some point in the season, and you go out and you draft a rookie quarterback. But in this situation, that's probably untenable because the ship has sailed here absolutely for sure between him and the fans.
That's the perspective that we were looking for. Mary Kay Cabot joining us. So how much does Jameis Winston and the way that he plays the rest of the year impact any of the decisions that you just talked about?
I think it impacts it in a big way. You have to see what Jameis has for you in store. You have to see what he can do. One game is beautiful. That was amazing. Everybody needed it. The receivers needed it. The fans needed it. The organization needed it. The receiver room was losing it. Things were going haywire. We all know that. So everyone needed that victory. Everyone needs the energy, the positivity, and all of the things that Jameis brings. But let's see what the rest of the season brings. No decisions have to be made right now. And just remember, I know everyone thinks that now he should be but people think, oh, he should be the starter next year, obviously. Just remember that this was the 32nd ranked pass defense minus two of their best cornerbacks. Maybe he will go on to throw for 300 yards a game like Joe Flacco did in so many of his games last season. And for fans, I know that would be fun and I know that would be exciting. But let's see how it plays out. I mean, when he plays the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, it might be a little different. Now, Kevin Stefanski did say yesterday that he is naming him the starter for the rest of the season. I think that's a good idea. Again, everyone needs that. The only drawback is that if he wins 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games, whatever it's going to be, you are kind of putting yourself behind the eight ball for a rookie quarterback. But maybe that won't matter as much if you can get things rolling again with this football team.
So if you win, you do good, but you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, is what you're telling me, Mary Kay?
Well, not necessarily, because basically what we saw on Sunday was the version of the Cleveland Browns that everybody thought that they were going to be this season. So in that scenario, you might not need to start selling off your good players, and you might just need to figure out your quarterback situation. And that's not impossible to do. The Pittsburgh Steelers did it this year. They went out and got themselves Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, and they just kept rolling along. And I think that's the model. That's what the Browns can do. They can find themselves a quarterback somewhere, whether it's a combination of Jameis Winston and DTR and a rookie or another veteran that they trade for and bring in or someone that they sign in free agency. This football team is not one that needs a massive rebuild. I mean, you've still got your core players on this team. So I just don't really think that this is a situation where they're going to have to go 1-16 to get good again.
So if he's going to be the starter the rest of the year, why did Dorian Thompson-Robinson take over as the backup there before the Cincinnati game? Was it just as simple as they wanted to see what Dorian Thompson-Robinson has if he has to come into the football game?
They viewed the two of them as their backups heading into the season, to the point where they were going to be willing, if someone made them the right offer for Jameis, they would have at least considered it at the beginning of the season. They had two backup quarterbacks that they felt good about, and Dorian had done a nice job in practice, and they were ready to see what he could do as the backup in the event that it came to that. But I think once it actually went down like that, I think they realized that at a time like this, you do need more of a veteran presence, that perhaps Dorian does need a little bit more seasoning, a little bit more time, and that Jameis is the one, just like Joe was last year, to guide the team through the tough times.
Mary Kay with us. So obviously that was the first game where Kevin Stefanski gave up his play calling duties. Have you been able to get a sense of how maybe not only did Ken Dorsey's play calling help the team, but how Kevin Stefanski being able to focus on other aspects of an NFL game may have helped the team?
Well, I absolutely 100% think that Kevin Stefanski could have called that game. Why do I think that? Because I've seen him call that game many times before, including last season so many times with Joe Flacco. So that's the kind of game that Kevin excels at, knows, and can call with his eyes closed. So I certainly don't think that he would have struggled to call that game for Jameis. Again, this was the 32nd ranked pass defense minus two of its top cornerbacks, and it was time to run the ball and take some explosive shots downfield. Kevin can do that. We know that. What we don't know is how Ken Dorsey would have done calling a game for Deshaun Watson, which was a major reason they overhauled this entire offense, was to try to maximize his skill set with more of the spread offense, more shotgun, more RPOs and things like that. We never saw him call that for Deshaun, so we don't know what that looks like. And in this town, we probably aren't going to ever know what that looks like. So it was a great first effort. I'm sure that Kevin did a nice job as the CEO coach, but I think he can multitask. So I just don't think that, you know, all of a sudden everything went so well because Kevin wasn't calling plays anymore. I think it was a combination of things like it usually is.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Do you think that there were any scenarios where Kevin stepped in and overruled Ken Dorsey?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if you're going to let him, they do collaborate on things, and they set, you know, they set everything up during the week, so much so that it almost doesn't matter who calls the plays. But no, I don't think so. I mean, if you're going to let your offensive coordinator call the plays, and he's done it before with great success, then you're not going to interfere in that situation. And it really wasn't even necessary in that game in any situation that I could see. So, you know, it was fine. It gives Ken a chance to show his play calling chops, and it gives Kevin Stefanski an opportunity to make sure that everything else is going okay. Because again, there have been some things going on this team in recent weeks where you've got Elijah Moore getting benched and you had Jerry Jeudy throwing his helmet into the bench. Things were starting to get a little tense, to get a little ugly in some areas, and it's not the worst thing in the world for Kevin to be overseeing the whole operation.
Why do you think Elijah was benched?
I don't know yet. I really don't know. I don't know what that was all about. I did ask him if he still wanted to be here, and he said yes. And I think he was just frustrated. And I don't know what happened behind the scenes for him to get benched yet. I don't know if I'll ever know, but I'll still try to find out.
Could this be Greg Newsom's last football game as a Cleveland Brown?
It possibly could be, but he said something at the end of the quote when we asked him about that yesterday. He said that he really trusts Andrew Berry and that Andrew Berry knows what he's capable of doing out there. It almost seemed like those two might have had some kind of a conversation about this and that perhaps he got some reassurance that he's not going anywhere. But you can never say never. You never say never in a situation like this. If they lose this football game, and I don't think they're going to lose this football game against the Chargers, but if they do lose this football game, then you might look at the trade deadline a little bit differently. If you win it, you have to say, maybe we can get a little run going here, and who knows what can happen. But if not, you start to view things a little bit differently. I think Greg is still going to be here, and he seemed to think so too.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Are there any other names that they can maybe part with that would not be raising the white flag, that they would be like, hey, we're still a competitive football team? Like, even after a win on Sunday, say they beat the Chargers, but they still make a move.
You know, I think that they can make moves that won't raise that white flag. If you can move a couple of guys that aren't going to make or break your football team over the rest of the season, they'll make those moves. But you're not going to see Denzel gone. You're not going to see Miles gone. You're not going to see the core pieces of your football team gone. And again, because if you look at it just in the same way, as I mentioned before about the Steelers, if you get the quarterback situation right, you can go rolling along again next year. You don't want to get rid of your core players.
Mary Kay Cabot, we thank you very much for the time. All the best to you and yours, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Mary Kay Cabot on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Outstanding as always. Cavaliers winners last night. Big winners.
Last night was awesome.
Actually, lost count. 134-110 was the final score.
Last night was so much fun because
it might have been the perfect basketball game for everybody involved. Except for the other Lakers, but it might have been the perfect basketball game for everybody who went
there. There's no doubt it is fun to have a back-and-forth game that you overcome adversity and win, but I don't need that every night. And sometimes it's nice to have a big game, and that game is out of reach in the first quarter. Sometimes it's nice for your team to do that.
I also don't need it in October. I don't need the back-and-forth in October. It proves nothing to me about what our team's going
well,
to be.
Well, and by the way, we kind of got it with the Knicks win, and that was on the road, yeah. And that's a team that, let's be honest,
I need it.
Has kind of intimidated us, and to go do that to them was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you got the best of both worlds. And then you have this game, and you get to see LeBron, and for all the people that paid all that money last night, those tickets were insane, how expensive it was for an October regular season basketball game. And for those fans to get to see LeBron, get to see him go through the warm-ups, he didn't look like LeBron. Like I know his stat line ended up being good, but you could tell it's not the same LeBron. And I don't know how many times he can dial up LeBron.
They had the one very early in the game where in transition he got the big dunk. He got the big LeBron
right
dunk,
away.
Right?
Yeah.
And then it was like, okay, I've given you your show.
We've seen it.
Now it's time to go on to the next thing.
Yeah, and you're right, Kenny. Everybody got what they wanted to at that game. There were a lot of Laker fans there. A lot of LeBron fans, a lot of Cavs fans, and everybody in unison was chanting to see LeBron's kid, Bronny, which I thought was really, really cool. And I think a clear indication that Cleveland can be a really good basketball town, because that was a very savvy basketball move.
See, I know what you're saying, and I don't want to start a big fight with you over words here, but I have always believed in what Terry Pluto has said, is that it's always been a good basketball town. I mean, you look at attendance, like this is where we do differ from Pittsburgh. They do really well in hockey. Neither of us do well in attendance in baseball, and I'm not going to sit there and act like we do. But we do well in basketball, and they do well in hockey. And it's different for both, and it works out because, hey, hockey fans can go between, and basketball fans can go between, whatever. I think it's an underrated basketball town, and I do think last night's one of the nights that kind of prove it. Just because I think it works in this city, and I think it works out really well. And last night I thought might have been the most perfect night ever for an NBA fan for all those reasons. As you said, I mean, you got to see your favorite team. They did well. Donovan Mitchell was great in yesterday's game. Didn't have to play too terribly much. I know you mentioned Evan Mobley scored a lot of his points in garbage time, but you got to see your legend come back. Are we over the nasty feelings when it comes to LeBron? I mean, other than the people just don't agree with him politically, are we over that?
I definitely. I mean,
this room has been over nasty feelings since 2013, but elsewhere, like,
and what?
Are
we
done?
I guarantee
he's at the end of his career. We kind of want to enjoy him now. I don't see the Lakers as a sincere threat.
It was a mutually beneficial thing. We've gone over it to death. But
yes, we have.
When I say, hey, if somebody can deliver a championship to the city of Cleveland, they can do whatever the hell they want afterwards. Hell, they can even trash the city afterwards. I don't care. I got my championship.
I don't think you can do that.
I got my championship, and I got the memories, and there's nothing you can do to take them. And by the way, LeBron doesn't trash the city. He says nothing but great things about the city.
Yeah.
By the way, him and his crew had a great time in Cleveland. May have had something to do with the fact that they got their butts kicked in so quickly and definitively.
What are you trying to say?
Hey, you know, they mentioned the famous Tales of the South Beach flu.
They had the Gold Coast flu, you're saying?
It might be. Maybe Tremont.
Tone or Owen, please. Please.
Maybe the East Side flu. I don't know. I was hearing varying reports.
The Emerald City
flu. It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Maybe
not the Emerald City.
Emerald Necklace, sorry.
Emerald Necklace, yeah.
Emerald Necklace.
Rocky River.
You've never heard that?
I'll show you.
I've heard of other necklaces, but I've never heard of an necklace here.
I thought you knew everything about Cleveland, Ken.
Emerald Neck. Talk amongst yourselves.
As portrayed
Emerald
in Draft Day.
Yes.
In the movie Draft Day, where he lives, where the coach lives.
Did they mention it in that movie?
No, that's just what it's called.
Oh my gosh, there's a marina and everything called the Emerald Necklace.
Yeah, yeah.
There's the Emerald Necklace Tea Room on the Rain Road. And I know where that tea room is.
You know, us true Clevelanders, we know all about it.
I've driven by. It's a bed and breakfast as well. Tone. I mean, I should just tell Liz. We can all stay there together. Oh, my
God.
The
there.
Emerald Necklace.
What can we do again at the bed and breakfast?
They have a bed and breakfast. It's a tea room. They have ice cream. This is amazing.
But all of that.
Emerald Necklace.
All of that is to say that, you know, this was a really cool. You want to talk about how we were hoping the Cavs could lift us up from the doldrums of getting eliminated in the postseason. The Browns had the 1-6 start, and we were like, can the Cavs save us? Well, they're 5-0. They are kicking the crap out of teams. Come on, Kenny. They look confident. They are doing whatever they want. They are dominating defensively, and now offensively, they got things moving. They don't even have Max Strus in the lineup. Everything's coming together.
I didn't hear anything you just
said. This has been awesome. Which is exactly what we were looking for.
Frederick Law Olmsted designed the Emerald Necklace in Cleveland. It's a trail of the Cleveland Metro Parks. There's a conservancy called the Emerald Necklace Conservancy. I had no idea about any of this.
It's, well, I was an East Sider. I didn't know about the West Side stuff.
I apologize.
When I was younger.
I apologize for going way off here. Okay, that's it.
I will never bring up things, facts about
No. Well, I thought I knew everything there was to know.
I thought I knew everything from Moses Cleveland
to the torso murders to Brian Casey walking out of city council meetings. Yeah. I thought I knew it all. I never heard of the Emerald Necklace.
Put a damn winning forest in our city.
216-474.
Somebody's going to call up and go, what about the Cuyahoga Valley National Park, Ken?
I know about that.
What the heck?
I knew about that.
What about the Polar Express?
I know about that.
What about Dead Man's Curve?
The place that we always wanted to go to with Les that we never went to. Actually, you went to. I never went to.
Sokolowski's?
No.
Oh.
Towels and Steaks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm not allowed to mention it on the air. So I just call it the Towels and Steaks.
They've been a little more accepting, I hear.
Well, accepting of us talking about it on the air?
Of different kinds of people showing up that didn't used to be able to go.
Can I go? Or I think would they not allow me there?
I think you could get in. You want to get paddled?
No.
Oh, for the pleasure, Ken. You can get a nice paddling.
That's how you get into Rocket Mortgage Filled House now?
That's insane. Coming up later on, anything easy ain't worth a damn. Coming up next, we have the wonderful George Niang.
That was our Cavs segment, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll ask if he likes to be pet. No. George Niang, Cavaliers forward. He joins us next on The Fan. I don't care. George's going to hear me sing it.
I think by the end of the year, George needs to memorize this song and do karaoke with it.
With us?
Oh, how great would that be?
George Niang joins us right now. North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. George, how the hell are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
How many times have you ever heard that song?
But I'm jazzed up, and it's only 8:40 in the morning.
Oh, scary. George, we got to teach him the lyrics. We got to have him sing it for karaoke, like you said, Tone. This is a one. You know what? Next summer, we should have him sing it at Campbell-Palooza. Next summer, Tone.
Honestly, Ken, I was a little pissed off that I didn't get the invite to a Campbell-Palooza. This is like, do I not look like a guy that would crush a charity beer pong tournament?
Wait, they said they invited you.
Someone's lying to me. I got some bones to pick with some people.
All right. I know exactly who you need to text, and we will make sure that's remedied next year.
I mean, they could be celebrating at that Campbell-Palooza a playoff berth and maybe more.
Oh, even more. You're 5-0, George. What's led to this incredible start, honestly?
I just think we've always had so much depth. I mean, you got to give our front office a lot of credit. You know, you look at our roster from 1 to 15, even our two-way guys, you know, that can play. And then, you know, obviously you bring in kind of like a mastermind like Kenny, kind of walks around looking like a mad scientist over there on the sideline. And he's kind of just, you know, allowed us to tap into our potential, you know, especially offensively, but still keeping our identity defensively. And I think the biggest thing is he's not afraid, you know, to get on guys and, you know, demand guys to play unselfish basketball. And I think that's what we've been doing, and we've been real process-based. You know, it's great being 5-0, but we're always looking to, it's about us. How can we continue to improve, be unselfish, do things for each other so that winning is something that happens every day.
All right, George, you used the term kind of a mastermind. He's been called an offensive guru. When did you know it? Obviously, you knew what people have said about Kenny Atkinson, and you've got teammates that have played for him. But what was it specifically that when he took over and it was time to actually roll out the new sets and hear his point of view, his worldview when it comes to basketball, when was it that you knew that you were dealing with a different guy when it comes to offense?
You know, to be honest with you, when he first got the job, I think he called everybody in. Just the way he was going over how to – our starting lineup is pretty unique, right? We have two bigs and two scoring guards. And how he described how he was going to, you know, use them and create space, I was like, wow, there's a lot of thought and mindfulness and purpose that goes into what this guy says. And it was just extremely impressive to hear him elaborate on how he wants to use, you know, Donovan, Darius, and Evan, and how it's going to create space for, you know, me, Karis, Max, Dean, Sam, to continue to make plays and get open threes, and how he wants to play fast. And, you know, once he started elaborating on that, I knew we were in really good hands.
Was there anything specifically he hit on for you that maybe you hadn't heard before, even though you're a veteran, you've been around long enough?
I don't know. I'm pretty freaking old, so I've heard every. No, I'm just kidding. I don't think it was any one thing specific, but it's just like when you're talking to someone and you understand that they understand what's going on and they can, you know, dissect things and pour into things where they're like, okay, you guys weren't doing enough of this, and I think this is what's going to make you successful. And I don't remember anything specific because it's 8:40 in the morning. I probably don't even remember what I ate for breakfast, but he gets it.
What time, George, what time do NBA players usually wake up? I mean, you guys are second shifter guys, so what time do you usually get up?
Yeah, I would say me and Tristan probably lead the charge at 6 a.m. because that's just the kind of guys we are. No, I'm kidding.
I was about to say, geez.
I probably get up around like 8:15 and kind of just start my routine and keep it rolling.
What time do some of the young guys wake up? Like, what time does Evan Mobley wake up in the morning or in the afternoon?
Yeah, that's a good point right there. I'm not going to put out his business, but you said and or afternoon. That's a TBD kind of question. But, you know, we have a ton of young guys. So these guys, I don't know, they're probably still growing, you know, eating popcorn in their bed, waking up with Sour Patch Kids hanging out of their hands. So I would probably say maybe closer to 10 for those guys.
How do you guys, George Niang joining us on the show, how do you guys, like, pace yourselves? Because it's like, oh, my God, they're 5-0 for only the third time in the organization's history. And it's a great start, but it's like you guys got to be looking at it going, guys, we got over 70 games left. How do we deal with the ebbs and flows? Like Donovan was talking yesterday about how they like to learn lessons through winning. It makes it a little bit easier. So how do you guys kind of go about this season?
Yeah, you know, when I talked about earlier about being like process-based, like it's great to win. Like don't ever take away from that and don't ever apologize for winning. And we love that. But at the end of the day, like, it's really one of the first times in my 9-year NBA career where everything is so focused on, like, us and getting better. Like, you know, whether if it's film, whether if it's your development, whether if it's taking care of your body, because we all know how injuries go, you know, during the year. Everyone's focused on, like, what can I do that's in my process or today that's going to make me better for the next day. And then the next day I'm doing the same thing to try and make myself better for the next day. And I think when you have that instilled in 15 to 18 guys' mind and along with the coaching staff, the training staff, like everybody's so dialed in on like, how can we continue to manufacture great days to get a little bit better so that when it comes late April, May, June, you know, we're playing our best basketball. I think the biggest thing for us is that, you know, obviously since LeBron has left, you know, the Cavaliers have gotten back to the playoffs. They've won a playoff series. But like I've said before in other times, is Cleveland fans expect you to get to the get to the finals and win. Like, that's just something that's expected. That's kind of the standard, you know, since, you know, LeBron was here, or, you know. So I think the biggest thing for us is manufacturing great days, stacking great days, so that we can be the best. And winning, that doesn't hurt your confidence either, Ken.
All right, George, oftentimes LeBron comes into town and it steals the show. It's everybody's talking about LeBron, and for obvious reasons, there's a banner hanging above. The guy is one of the most famous athletes in all the world, and he comes through, he rolls into town with his son. They're getting all the questions about whether Bronny's going to play, and then you guys just kind of calmly kick their ass in the first quarter. How did that feel, and was there kind of a tone that you guys wanted to set that maybe you talked about before the game?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for us was kind of drowning out that noise. You know, it's easy to get, you know, looped in all the hype and, you know, feel some type of way and want to make it about, you know, your team because we are at home. But at the same time, we should never discredit, you know, what LeBron has done in this career. I mean, I think that he's played more years than some guys on our team have been alive. So that's pretty friggin' impressive. But at the same time, I think the biggest thing for us is that every night is an opportunity for our team, you know, to continue to prove, you know, that you were for real. And we continue to take that challenge. And last night was another thing, or another opportunity for us to do that. And I think we did a great job of playing fast and making the Lakers play against our half-court defense. I don't know if you know, but trying to score over Evan Mobley and Jared Allen is like trying to run the ball against Alabama back in the day.
That's a very tough thing to do. George Niang joining us here on the show. Were you paying attention when Bronny came into the game? You know, we have to ask you about the kid.
Yeah, Ken. So I actually have a fun story. So he checks in the game, and I go up to Ty Jerome, and I ask him, I said, has Bronny scored, you know, since he's been in the NBA? And Ty was like, I don't think so. And I asked one of the Lakers players, they're like, no. I was like, okay, good. Well, I'm not going to be guarding him. Isaac, you go guard him. And then our rookie guarding him, and he ended up scoring. But the reason saying that is because I knew that was going to be a highlight that I was going to be playing one forever and all day, every day on ESPN today. So I'm glad I could take a nice break from being the star of the show, but not the star of the show.
That is a savvy veteran move right there. See, that's you great. Knew. You knew exactly what that was going to be like.
Yeah. I mean, give the kid credit. I mean, he looked, you know, there was some, like, he scored his first 2 points, and, you know, he didn't look like he was overwhelmed or excited. And then the next play, he had a chance to go, and someone stripped him. But he looks, like, extremely explosive. Like, I was actually pretty impressed.
All right, George, you guys got a big win in New York as well. And so while we're here coming on the heels of a dominating performance, I was almost more impressed with you guys battling back when it looked like same old between the Knicks and Cavs, and you guys put an end to it, and Darius went off in the fourth quarter at MSG. What was that like after the game?
You know, that was great. You know, obviously, you know, people have said a lot about that Knicks and Cavaliers, you know, rivalry. And, you know, I think for us is that we wanted to keep chipping away. I know in the third quarter we got down 12, got it back to even, and even took the lead. But what Darius, the performance that Darius put on was second to none. That was impressive, you know, kind of just putting the team on your back, making tough shot after tough shot. And then he doesn't get enough credit. He had a huge block down the stretch against Jalen Brunson. And those are the type of plays that you need, you know, from your leaders. And, you know, just speaking on that, and I think Kenny instills that belief and demands that greatness out of those core guys that, you know, are our leaders. And that was just a moment where Darius, you know, rose to the occasion. And, That's expected, and I'm happy that he's healthy, because a healthy Darius is someone that the Cavs need.
All right, so they want me to ask you this question. I don't. Well, remember, it comes from a respectful place. We both know what I look like, but a lot of people want to know. Have you lost weight? You've always been in good shape, George, but have you lost weight?
Yeah. You know, I definitely honed into my body. It was something that was important to me. I think after the way the season ended last year, I think, you know, a lot of people were disappointed, but, you know, I was extremely disappointed. And, you know, I definitely wanted to come back and be in the best shape that I can be to help this team win games. Because let me tell you this. There's no better place to be when Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse is on fire after winning at home in a Game 7 in the playoffs. Let me tell you that.
George, it's wonderful. We can't thank you enough for the time. We hope to run you down again very soon. All the best. Continued success, my friend.
Yes, and Ken, if I don't get that invite to Campbellpalooza, just delete my number, all right, pal?
I will make sure you get the invite to Campbellpalooza. My phone has lit up several times. We will make sure it happens this year, okay? I promise.
All right, and make sure you cheer on my Cyclones, man. We can't let Matty Campbell and Skip go without our blessing.
You know we're 7-0. Cheering over here. You know we're cheering over here. Hopefully they get it. Texas Tech's a little bit difficult this year. I don't know what they're doing with them. But either way, George, thank you very much for the time, buddy.
Appreciate you guys.
Oh, George Yang joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.